Hello and welcome to pod 23 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grissom from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube, the Palace app and every single social media channel. This week I'm recording these bits outside because it's lovely and springy at the moment. The birds are tweeting in the trees, the sun is shining down on the Beckenham training pitch. So I'm just sat outside on the steps outside our little media building here at the training ground, watching some of the players do some gentle training. Right, on this podcast, we have got, it's a bit of a Martin Kelly special actually, and we'll get to that a little bit later on, but elsewhere we've got Statman, who's talking about condiments. We've got a guy who is 32nd in the world in Fantasy Premier League, and we've got Roy's weekly press conference. So a bit of a mixed bag this week, but yeah, it's a Martin Kelly special because he signed a new contract extension to 2021. So instead of getting him in to do a typical new contract interview, like a serious over-the-shoulder camera one, we thought we'd do something a little bit different. So we sat him down in the press conference room and got him to watch back on the laptop some of his favourite moments. Well, say my favourite moments, because I picked them. My favourite moments of him at Palace over the last 4.5 years. Some serious ones, game stuff, some jokey stuff. I think you'll be able to work out from listening to it which bits we're talking about, which games we're talking about. We cut it down to a video that was about 9 or 10 minutes online, but this was about 20 minutes in total, I think, that we were chatting. And then I also asked him some questions that people had sent in to me on Twitter, which was good as well. And I think it's... He comes across, he is a really nice guy. He's a really nice, down-to-earth guy. Great to have at the club. And it's really nice, actually, to see on social media how much the fans love him at the moment as well. So anyway, here is that audio of me chatting to Martin Ronald Kelly. Martin, you've signed a new contract at the club, so I thought it was a good opportunity to have a look at some of your best bits in your few years. What would you say is your highlights reel?
I think, you know, being part of a squad that have remained in the Premier League since I've come, that's been a real challenge. We've had a great set of lads. We've got a great set of lads still now. We've added well to the squad, so it's always been exciting being at Palace. And I've loved the challenge of trying to stay in such a good league, and really enjoyed my time there.
Easy decision to sign a new contract?
Yeah, I think so. I think I believe that I'm coming into, you know, as a centre half, the experience is coming now. I've been given the chance the past couple of seasons to play there, and feel like each game I'm learning in the games I'm playing in. I'm watching the first couple of seasons, people in front of me, I've learned a lot from them, and when the chance have come for me, I've enjoyed playing with some top class defenders. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's roll back the clock to 2014. He's younger.
He is, yeah. Where's the greys?
So do you remember this? Do you remember the day
you
came down?
Yeah, I mean, there was a GIF, wasn't there, about an hour later?
We'll get to that, yeah.
Right, okay. Yeah, it's timing of interviews is great, isn't it? But,
so where did you travel down from?
I'd come from up north, travelled, I think that day or the night before, and then I was in training with the lads a couple of days before the Arsenal game. Even before I'd signed there, I'd just trained, I think. And then, you know, an hour or two later, you find out that the manager has signed, just left. So the emotions are, you know, all over the place for a little while, but then you sit down with the coaches and backroom staff, and they reassured me that they bought myself for the future of the club, and It was a club effort to sign me, so no matter what manager was to come in, I guess I just had to keep my head down and graft for that next few months when it was up in the air as to who was coming in.
I guess the one constant through those early periods, Keith Millen, was it?
Keith who got me in, to be honest, and sort of settled me, being still a young lad then, who's come from from Liverpool to try and play regular football in the Premier League, to the manager, you know, leaving so quickly. It was tough, but you've got a couple of days to get your head on Arsenal away at the Emirates. So it's part and parcel of being a football player, I guess. You're thrown into situations that you've got to deal with to stay, you know, in at the top. And I think that it's been a great few years there.
And there's the meme you talked about. Do you remember seeing that at the time?
I don't remember seeing this, but I remember seeing the tweets on about, you know, Tony walking to his car with the.
It's good. It's just the fact that you're looking out across the grass, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's nowadays what you can do on social media is brilliant, isn't it? So I guess for the fans, it was a bit of banter for them.
So moving on, obviously we had Neil Warnock for a bit, and then Alan Pardew came in, and the I guess the first game, and you played in it, was the one against Spurs, one of the first games, this home game. Do you remember this one?
Yeah, I remember this game. It was a game that you realised how electric the fans are at home, and whenever the so-called top six come to Palace, it's always tough for them. We know that we go into games with a real energy about us when we're playing the top teams, because we've got our 12th man being the fans. It's always going to be a tough game against Tottenham, whether you're home or away, but it was great to get this.
It's a great start from Pods. What did he do to kind of turn things around and get us flying up the table?
I think he came in, he had a certain way of playing. He was a club legend, so he gave that bounce around the place that, you know, Alan's back to change, move us in the right direction, and it definitely worked when he came in.
Just go on a little bit further. So at this point you were playing fullback, weren't you? Were you?
Yeah, I think I played a bit left back under.
It's quite a big run of left back, wasn't there, under
Alan?
Park?
Yeah. It was again. I learned a lot playing there. Preferred fullback, you know, right back at the time, but to play anywhere in the Premier League in them games, you know, you try and put a shift in for the team and get the job what's asked for you done.
So the team kind of flew up the table, and then towards the end of the season, you returned to Liverpool. It was Gerrard's last game at Anfield, and it was the first time that you played centre-back.
Right.
So do you remember that as being quite a
special day? Yeah, it was a good outing for us, wasn't it?
It was the start of a good run against Liverpool in Liverpool.
Yeah, it was. I remember it being us clapping, Stephen out for his last game, and it never went their way that day. So we managed to get the result, and you know, it's been a tough game for them ever since, hasn't it? Playing us, so it was a good game to win.
Yannick had a good game in that one, didn't he?
Yeah, I think I always remember when I first signed up watching Yannick and Wilf down each side, and remembering, thank God, and you know, I'm on the side that are playing with them and not against them, because each week players on the opposite team, seeing them come up on the team sheet, must have been really tough.
I remember interviewing you around this time, it was before this game, and I think we had a question from Twitter asking about your favourite position. You said, at the moment, fullback, but you'd like to play centre-back in the future. When you played centre-back in this game, did you think that you were then going to, at that point, make the move into the middle?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was coming around this time. To move over to centre back. I remember playing this game, you know, we won. The manager picked someone else to play centre half. It's that happens in the Premier League. You've got great centre halves to choose from. So I guess it was about being patient again and waiting to get the chance against centre half.
So then over the summer, I guess around this time, Pap Suárez came in, didn't he? Was it before this? No, it was like the year after this. We'll cut that. So then we get to the next season under Pars. It was a really good start. The team was flying. But this is your, I guess, one of your biggest moments here. What are you, this is against Spurs in the FA Cup. What are you thinking here?
Yeah, I remember not playing too much in and around this time, but knowing that chances came in the cups, you know, with squad rotation and stuff. So I was, I remember doing sprint training at around that time, trying to keep myself on top of things, knowing that when my chance came, I'd have to take it. And then we played Tottenham away. I started full back. I've not played for a little bit. And when you've got Wilf on that side, it's, you know, it's easy for you to play with him in front of you. You sort of just give him the ball and let him do the rest. And I was backing him up as I usually do when I'm playing with Wilf. And, you know, luckily for me, instead of him taking the people on like he usually does, he played me in. And there was only one sight on, one thing in my mind that I wanted to do was try and score, and scored. And so happened to help us go on the run to Wembley that year, so it was great.
And the goal celebration, it was something to do with John Flanagan, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was at the time, you know, we were mates and we both said in a group chat the next person to score has to do the celebration, so it was...
Yeah, what does it come from?
It was just a private joke between ourselves, yeah.
Keep it private?
Yeah.
Actually, that's the point. Why'd you wear number 34? Made me think.
I think just the first squad number I was given at Liverpool. It was kept from then and I sort of wanted to keep it. Creature of habit, I suppose. I didn't like. Don't want to change the number that I've always felt like I've represented. So that's why I've kept 34.
Got to the FA Cup final. Are you disappointed to not play in the final, not start?
It's always difficult not playing games. But if you wanna stay at the top, it's how you cope with that when that decision's thrown at you. So as long as it's the manager's choice at the end of the day, isn't it? So you've got to respect his decision and know you've got to understand that any time you can be called upon and you've got to be ready to go and do your job for the team when asked. So I'm still yet to play at Wembley, even though I've been there, you know, 7, 8, 9 times. I've always been, you know, on the bench, so it'd be great to play there.
So then Pards leaves and Big Sam comes in eventually. And under Big Sam, you actually played, had a good run at centre-back, didn't you, towards the end of that season?
Yeah, I think Sam gave me the opportunity to play there at what seemed to be a difficult time. In our circumstances, we were up against it and I think we went on a good run at beating some good sides. The way he set us up, he came in and he was brilliant, to be fair. He knew what he wanted and we all jumped on board and done what he told us to do. So it was a great run that we had under Sam and eventually, you know, stayed up from it.
So then Frank came in and then we go to Roy. And then this game that you played, this is the Leicester away one, which felt like, did that feel like one of the games where everything clicked?
Yeah, I think having spoke to the gaffer before this, he sort of knew me at Liverpool as fullback. I was more or less, been playing centre back a bit the season before, so I always knew that if asked, yeah, I could play there and fill in at fullback again. So it was a great game for us against the top opposition there at the King Power. So it was good to get that result under Roy once, you know, playing in the Premier League again. It's always good to be in the games that you're winning.
Saw a clip of you doing the pre-match interview there. What are you like before a game? Does it, saw you in the tunnel as well, are you a guy that has to focus and separate himself from everything, or are you quite relaxed?
I think I'm relaxed up until game day then, and then you start getting excited to play. So everyone's different. People are, you know, really chilled in the dressing room right before we go out for the warm-up, but I think I've always been, you know, focused on the job that's needed to be done on the day, trying to get as much rest as possible the night before and then enjoy it as much as you can on the day.
Roy's talked, he's talked before about how he loves having you in the squad. I mean, I know all Palace fans say you're Mr. Reliable whenever you come in, you do perfect. How much do you enjoy playing that role of being the one that always seems to do well whenever you're asked to come on? Or how fired up are you to be the starting guy?
I think if you ask any footballer, they want to start games. I'm no exception, but you've got to understand that the games are, you know, 38 game long in the Premier League. So it's, you're always going to get your chance. You just need to keep yourself as fit as possible and know the tactics and the jobs that's going to be asked for you when you're called upon. So for me, we're such a great bunch of lads and so much talent in our squad now. It's exciting times to be at Palace. It's definitely the most exciting times in the past couple of seasons to be here with these guys out there showing what they can do in training as well as, you know, on game day. And to be playing for Palace in the Premier League, you know, I'm enjoying every minute I get to play. And I just, you work the same on a game day as you do out in training. So it's sort of easy on a game day when you train as hard as you possibly can to try and replicate what you're doing in training.
I actually had a look at, I did some maths yesterday, it took me about half an hour. Our win percentage without you in the starting 11 is 33% since you've been at the club, and with you in the starting 11 it's 37%.
Right, so it's positive. Yeah, I mean, we're all born winners, us who are at the top in the Premier League, so it's a nice stat to know. And, you know, when I came to Palace, it was all about having more wins in the Premier League than losses. You understand that coming from Liverpool, where you do get a lot of wins, it's more of a battle, and the 3 points definitely feel much better at Palace when you get them. So it's harder earned, but when you get them, there's a certain satisfaction that's great.
This is a lot of people's favourite Martin Kelly moment here.
Oh, that's loud. Yeah. I'll be getting this for the first time before you probably mentioned it in training a couple of days later, but...
Yeah, Edith had fun doing that.
I think it was a time in the game where it was out there, ball needed to be won, and it, you know, the fans after that was bang up for it, so as long as we're keeping them happy, that's the main thing.
And then the next bit in the of that season, this game, which was an amazing defensive display against the Man City side at that point, 0-0, was that a great game to play in?
Yeah, I think I came on early in this game. It was the one that we missed the penalty in the last...
Yeah, that's minute. The one.
Yeah.
Injuries in that one.
Yeah, it was a couple of bad injuries with Scott there, and it was a good display from us. I think it would have been the first time they lost, wasn't it, that season. So for us to take them that far, and, you know, we outplayed them on the day and deserved the win, to be honest. If you asked Pep after the game, he said that we was difficult to play against. And I think if you see their series they brought out on Prime,
yeah,
they go on about our pitch, don't they? Oh, it's a tough ground to go. So that's
got a formation wrong though, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. It's got to get something wrong, hasn't it? But we were great for that game and probably should have got another win under my stats belt.
Yeah, should have another one. I haven't done draws though. I'll do that. So we're on to this season now. So this is, you came in against Leicester, man of the match, as voted for by the fans. Is that a good moment? It feels like you're a bit of a fan's favourite now.
I think any time you come in and you get the result that you work for, it's special. It's extra special for me because I get, you know, less chances than to play every week at the moment. So it's always good coming in and getting the result from everyone who chips in that we want. So I think that home game was a vital 3 points, as will every other 3 points that we get from now to the end of the season. So it was a good game, and as ever, the fans were brilliant on that day.
Must be annoying. You got injured straight after that, didn't you?
Yeah, I hurt my groin that day, and you're off thinking you're going to be in getting a little run of games, but you can't stop injuries. It's part of the game. You just got to focus on when you can next be available and do the same again.
And then most recently, we had a nice cup run, which you've played in. That looked pretty special up at Doncaster with the crowd.
Yeah, I think it was up there, one of the loudest away out from our fans in a while, yeah. But it's every away game, you can always hear our fans, you know, whether we're winning or we're losing. They're always at it. Anyone who were speaking to me after the game who's in the opposition's changing rooms always going about our fans, how loud they are. It must be great playing in front of them at Selhurst. It is, because you get a drive when you're going through parts of the game where, you know, you try and talk out on the pitch and get people to stay in the game, but our fans are there creating this noise in the background that's helping you to remain focused for the 90 minutes. And so much credit needs to go to them fans for turning up week in, week out and making that sort of noise for us who are trying our best to get them the result they want on a Saturday.
And we're going to finish off with our drone pilot. Caught you scoring some good goals in training.
All right.
Recently.
Yeah. It's not here much, is it, Mace? But it's when it is here, you've managed to catch one or two. I think the past few weeks I've been red hot in the 5-0, so I'm glad at least once he's come and videoed it.
Oh, he's done a replay as well. Look at that.
Yeah, I don't think we won on go for those, Wardy, top bit. But yeah, it's nice to see some of the footage back. I don't think we won on the day, but it's great to see this back.
Shame it can't be filmed every day, isn't it? We get a lot of people saying, did you...
I fall in the water bottles there, I think, if you see it. Oh, you just cut that out, but I end up falling in the drinks bottles, getting the assist. Yeah, cool. What a job, eh?
Yeah,
brilliant.
It's not bad, is it? What, you mean being a drone pilot or being a professional footballer?
I don't know, actually. It seems quite cool as well.
Okay, that's it for that section. I'm just going to do some questions from the World Wide Web now. Okay, in your opinion, which performance in a Palace shirt has been your best to date and why?
I think best performance for Palace, probably Leicester at home. I think that or Wolves at home always sticks with me. Not Wolves, sorry, Hull at home. I think we needed to win that game under Sam. And we ended up winning it, I think, was it?
4-0.
4-0, yeah. So that, in terms of having to play under pressure, was up there for me. And in terms of blocks and playing overall, really, really well was the Leicester game at home.
Someone says, just tell him we all think he's an absolute hero and have massive respect that any time he's called upon, he gives us outstanding performances. Cult hero. Yeah. I might be interviewing you in 15 years' time. I'll come and,
yeah, I hope so.
Come and find you working as a foreman on a building site. What was going... Oh, we've done that. We've talked about Spurs. I'd like to know his typical order at a curry house.
I've not had a curry in ages. Probably a chicken doona dish. Nothing too hot.
How many poppadoms do you have normally?
To start, probably about four now, because Catherine only eats half of one, so end up eating hers as well.
What's going to be your celebration when you score in the cup final?
I don't know what I'd do if I scored in a cup final. Hopefully it'd be past 80 minutes so I could run in the crowd.
I think I'd run on the pitch.
Yeah. What if I scored?
Yeah. Does, not saying that you wouldn't.
No, it's good.
No, but I would be happy. Do you think the 49 pace on your FIFA card is fair?
I don't
out
think
of what,
it
100?
Is. Yeah.
No, they've got to come down and see me race against Wilfred, haven't they?
How would you get on against Wilfred?
Well, we've had a race once.
Did you win?
I think he gave me like a half a yard head start, but it was really close.
Not bad. Someone said, who would win a race between you and Joel Ward?
I'd let you ask Wardy that one. I don't answer that.
And this is a reference to the Valentine's video we did. What did you make as part of the three-course meal?
You know what? It's the way you guys timed that as well. The last little bit of clips was me at the end saying three-course meal. Yeah. To be honest, we didn't used to celebrate me and Kath because she used to work on Valentine's 8 till 8 as a nurse. So I'd make sure when she got back after a long shift, she'd have a nice three-course meal waiting for her. So it's nice at the time. And I'm sure we'd do more romantic things.
How on earth do you get your hair to stay like that? The geezer's barnet looks $1 million every time he plays.
Yeah, it takes a bit of training, a bit of gel, but I've always been, you know, obsessed with my hair, even through school, and love having the wet look on it and try and keep it as pristine as possible. But I just gel it and keep it wet for game days.
Is that a comb? Got a comb?
No,
or a brush?
It's just hands through, yeah.
Really?
Fingers through.
Sam from our social media team told me to ask Kels if he's got a deal with Just For Men.
That's a deflection, isn't it? Have you seen his hair?
Yeah, he's grey.
Yeah, he's grey, isn't he? Yeah, but no, not yet. I think if people start noticing it, then you
might. Not too bad, are you? Yeah, sure, on the sides. We did make the set black and grey.
I mean, you'd be the first one to tell me as well, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Seeing us all the time.
I've got
a bit of stick.
White on the chin now. I'm older than you. Do you prefer red or green apples?
Green.
Good choice. Who's got the better trim, Zaha, Batshuayi or Bakary Sakho?
I don't know. They all come in with decent trims, don't they?
I quite like the CU with hair like one of
those.
Yeah,
mad, doesn't it?
I go on, do it. Over the summer.
I don't know how long it is.
Do it, just grow, get dreads.
I grew my hair once, didn't I, when I done.
Oh, yeah. Did you wear an Alice band as well on the pitch?
Yeah. You've got to try it once, I think, to know that it doesn't suit you and then to shave it off.
What about bleached hair? What do you think about bleached hair?
No, not for me. Vicente gets a bit of stick at the minute for having his done. I don't know what colour his is at the minute.
Well, we can find out what colour his is, because he asked Drone Pilot what colour his hair was, and he sent him a picture of the packet of dye that he uses.
Right, what was it?
Buy it for him as well.
Grey blonde.
It's, I think officially it's platinum.
Platinum, mm-hmm. Yeah. Terrible.
Wow.
But yeah, I had to go and buy it for him.
That's it.
Cool.
That's the end. Thanks for spending so much time.
No problems, thank
Congratulations on the new contract.
Yeah, cheers, bro.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Martin Kelly there, and now we're going to move on. We're going to move Statman up the order. He's second on today. Congratulations, Statman. This week, I caught up with him in the home dressing room.
I'm a Statman.
Yes, that's right. I'm in the dressing room, the home dressing room with Statman. How do you feel to be in here?
I'd be honest, I feel remarkably overdressed. I'm in a suit and tie, and it's just not the occasion for it, is it?
Well, you could be the manager.
Yeah, no, that's what I've gone for. That's the look I've gone for. This is the room of dreams, so it's an honour to be in here. You get in here every single match, then, don't you? Look at me, I'm Grierson. Let me
go on, lads. Yeah. Work on your diction for the post-match interviews. I do pop in, but I don't talk to anyone.
You leave it to it. If Hodgson wants you, you'll come. But
yeah, he'll come and get me, you know. Yeah. So actually, for those that haven't been in the dressing room, we are in the main big area here, where it's pointless telling anyone because you can't see it, but there used to be an extra room here as you walk in on the right hand side.
I do this for my tours. Yeah, I say what you're about to say.
It was here when I first started working.
Yeah.
Alan Pardew came in.
Knocked it down.
Yeah, knocked it down. Yeah. Because he wanted to open it up so there was more room. And it was a very good idea because it was a very strange room.
And it all spanned back to him being a player. And he always thought the manager was cut off from the players. And he thought, number one, I'm quite literally knocking that wall down.
And he did very soon after joining. I did interview him in it once. And? It was in the early days when I did many awkward interviews with him. Yeah. People thought they were awkward. He had this sense of humour where he would
take the mick out of me.
Yeah.
But he was joking. A lot of deadpan joking.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
People were like, oh, yeah. The poor boy. And I was like, I'm actually all right.
So is that where you got your style? Because I'd like to think that's what you base yourself on now, isn't it? That's
what making people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, just deadpan. That's Grierson's bread and butter, isn't it?
Yeah,
4-4-2 every week, deadpan, Grierson.
Yeah, I'm pards. The fridge, you mentioned this when you came in.
Yeah, well, to be honest, yeah, this is more a question for you. I've walked in here, and just to describe it, as you come in on your right in the changing rooms, big old fridges here, two of them set next to each other, filled with one of them, nothing but chili sauce.
Well, yeah, and other condiments. But yeah, lots of chili sauce in there. Yeah. There's a big bottle of rollover chili sauce.
Yeah.
There's a big bottle of Thai sweet chili.
Yeah.
There's two bottles of sriracha, hipster sauce.
Yeah.
There's a brown sauce, a mayonnaise. Is that a salad cream? And then another brown sauce about. But yeah, lots of spice. So I'm guessing, because after the game, they have fast food.
Yes.
There's pizza.
Yeah.
Potato wedges.
Yeah.
Chicken burgers.
Yeah. What was that you were
not
telling
good for
me?
A vegan. I have the vegan option, wedges.
Before we went live here, you were telling me, I don't know if you want to come clean.
Well, on a match day when I've done the post-match interviews, you know, when all players have gone, sometimes I pop in here and scoop up loads of potato wedges and take them back to my staff while they edit.
That's the leader.
The hot sauce will be for that, but it's very popular. We have sriracha down at the training ground. It's nice.
And nothing but, on match days I've often seen nothing but brown sauce. We've moved. There's been a condiment change here in the changing rooms. Could this be the secret behind our recent good form?
Yeah, definitely. It's all in the hipster sauce. So there's also a medical room in there. That's where people
We've got to talk about the wheelie bins.
There's a toilet there. Only one urinal.
Yeah.
For a matchday squad of 18 plus staff.
I'll be honest, you've got to be brave as well, because as you're at the doorway, it's in plain sight if you're using that urinal. So that's a confident man that uses that.
Yeah, it's right next to the sink. You wouldn't want to wash your hands next to...
It's not particularly...
It kind of defeats the object. down the corridor, actually, there's a toilet that I think the manager uses. But when Pardew was here... Yeah, it suddenly went from being a toilet to it had a sign on it saying manager's room, keep up. It's not a manager's room. He just wanted his own toilet.
I thought that's the same. Isn't that the same? Only Hodgson's allowed to use that toilet.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's...
You've been using it, have you?
I haven't. No. I might have done my hair in it a couple of times. Only two cubicles. So there you go. Three places to use the toilet with all those people.
So if we're ever late out back for a second half, you know it's because there's a queue in the toilets.
Yeah, I wonder what goes on in here. And then we move in. I'm doing your job.
Although
we don't know what you do. The showers.
Yeah.
Overhead ones. Nice. Like those square kind of chrome.
Do you know what? Hennessy's struggling to get under that for me. That's a big...
It doesn't move money to break that.
No.
And what? There's an exercise bike in the shower.
Yeah, as you do. It's the wheelie bins, Chris, that I want to bring your attention to.
Green wheelie bins. I mean, the type you find on the street.
Are they recyclable? Treat nicely. There's a sticker on it that says treat nicely.
I'm guessing they're full of ice, right, on a match day?
It must be, mustn't
it? Yeah, they are. They fill the wheelie bins with ice and then you jump in.
Yeah, but I mean, these are Croydon Council special state-of-the-art ones, really.
Of course.
But
right,
have we got on the changing rooms quickly. Sorry, the Netflix documentary. I love that. Have you seen the episode with Man City?
Yeah, in the away dressing room. Yeah.
And I love how we don't give the away team an inch, do we? And they have to say Gabriel Jesus thinks he's broken his ankle. He's out of the World Cup. He's in tears. Where is he on the medical treatment room? In the shower, because that's where he could only go.
Yeah, there's no room. Yeah. Sometimes they try and nick my interview room.
Oh, God, do they not know who you are? Jesus Christ.
We've talked about bacon before, haven't we?
Is this on the floor. Is this where they threw bacon at you because of that? Or?
No, this is other people. Sometimes they use interview rooms to store their fitness equipment in. I have to have arguments. The Bournemouth staff are the worst.
Are they? Can we have a segment on...
Can I say that?
Other club staff, yeah. Yeah, so they come and they...
No, it was just one particular guy and the fitness thing was... A bit snarly.
Yeah, he hadn't watched Hollyoaks, had he?
No, or Bad Girls the Musical. Right, let's sit down and talk stats because
Yeah.
6 minutes in.
This is good for you. You don't need to do any other interviews now. One of these days, I dream of just a one-on-one stat man.
Yeah, keep on dreaming. Just you open up your bit of paper that you've just printed off.
Right. Who are we playing, Chris?
Leicester City.
We are playing Leicester City. Now, my good friend, Tommy the Tank, is a Leicester City fan. And Tommy the Tank says...
Tommy the Tank.
I mean, it is a nickname. He wasn't christened that.
Where did he get the nickname Tommy Tank
Six-a-side football. He's got an engine. He's got an absolute engine. He does not stop running. He manages to cover the same amount of ground, 12 kilometres, that Luka Milivojevic does. And he covers that ground in a 40-minute five-a-side match.
How do you know?
I've not... I mean, I've not really...
Oh, right, sorry, I thought he was wearing a Fitbit or something. No, okay.
No. But anyway, we digress. Tommy the Tank. Anyway, Leicester City fan, he says, and I always find this really interesting because us as Palace fans and other fans, they have an insight that stats can't dig up. And he says that Crystal Palace are their bogey team, which I find really interesting. You're not going to find that in stats, are you? That's through getting out there, networking with five-a-side football players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
Why? And I'm pleased you asked that.
Because we won 5-0.
Well, that flows nicely into my stats, Chris. Yes, we won 5-0. That's our biggest ever Premier League win, ever. But we've now won 3 out of 3 against them. And the aggregate score is 9-0.
Wow.
Wow.
Tommy the Tank.
Tommy the Tank knows his stuff. And then, moving on then. So, in terms of wins in a row, we're now up to 3 against Leicester. Our best ever wins in a row in the top flight is Southampton and Stoke. We beat 4 times in a row. And best one ever is Wimbledon. The boys from up the road did them 5 times in a row. So this could equal, we could go into second place with wins in a row in the top flight. I mean, it's quite, you're shaking your head like, what are these stats? But
I was actually thinking of, you said Wimbledon, the boys from up the road. And it just reminded me that you live in Putney.
Yeah, up the road from you. It lives in Richmond. It's worse for you. Right, okay. Let's look at other ones. Palace away from home. So they've won 3 Premier League away games against Leicester now. And the only team we've beaten more on the road in the Premier League is Everton with 4. So we could equal that record if we win our 4th away game against Leicester on Saturday. And let's go on now. So enough of the bogey form. Let's look at Leicester's form. Let's look at Palace's form. Now, firstly, Palace... I found this stat quite interesting. We've got 67% of all our Premier League goals have come away from home, which probably doesn't surprise us because we've picked up so many points away from home and home form has been a bit of a struggle, especially goal-scoring-wise. But that percentage of away goals means that it's the highest in the division.
That's good.
Yeah, so quite interesting there.
Good and bad, I suppose.
Yeah.
Good that we're scoring away from home, but bad that... It's more than home. Yeah, I suppose so.
But decent away little record. Leicester then. So we're talking about the bogey team curse and that. At some point, that's got to end, hasn't it? Because if Leicester lose, this is not bogey form. Leicester have lost 3 in a row now at home in the Premier League. If they lose again on Saturday, they haven't lost 4 in a row at home in the Premier League since 2000, January 2000. So that's a 19-year record in the waiting. So you think, surely that can't happen. Can it?
Yeah, it will.
Yeah, it absolutely will. Let's move on to the men to watch. In fact, it's just the man to watch I've got here. And do you know what? I'm pleased we're talking about him. Big Christian Benteke.
Big Christian Benteke. Okay, why are we talking about him?
He has scored in each of his last 3 Premier League games against Leicester. If you remember rightly, that was actually his last Premier League goal.
Oh, yeah, the penalty where he slipped.
He pretended to slip.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Smacked it down the middle. Yeah, that was his last Prem goal. If he scores, though, and he scores against Leicester, it will be the first time he's ever scored in 4 consecutive games against an opponent. So, big moment for him. And let me flow nicely onto Roy Hodgson. Now, I don't know if we've gone out with this one as a club because it's been debated, hasn't it, if this is a good stat or not. I would argue it is. And that is that Hodgson will become the oldest Premier League manager in history to take charge of a game. That's 71 years.
Yeah, he's been doing lots of press about it this week.
And?
But I don't know. They've been filming it. I haven't put it out yet. But keep your eyes out.
Yeah. No, I want your thoughts on it, though.
Oh, what do I think? Yeah.
I've not written. You look at my paper as if I've written.
Age is just a number, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I guess it's impressive.
Yeah. Why? Not, I think it just shows adaptability, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It's the fact that he's managed, like, is it 20 clubs, 20 teams?
Yeah, something in so many different it's countries incredible. As well, and internationally, club-wise, all levels, high, low. I think, yeah, I'm a massive Hodgson fan, and
that's
crucially...
That's why nothing fazes him. That's why he's so experienced. That's why he can stand on the touchline and, you know, if fans are singing, oh, make a sub, he's just... He can just put the blockers up and go, no, I know what's best.
I've seen it all before. I'm 71 years old and 199 days. I've done it all before. And crucially, he's one of our own.
Yeah. Freedom of the borough.
Freedom of the borough, the key to the city. One more. Now, this one was dug up by my accomplice, Dan Blundell, in the ticket office.
Yeah, I went in to see him recently and he mentioned something about how he'd been giving you stats.
Yeah, I feel guilty.
You mentioned
now.
It on the pod last time, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, and rightly so, because this guy's digging up some gems here. And to be honest, these two stats, for me, sum up our season. Two stats summing up Crystal Palace's 2018-19 Premier League season. First one is, only Chelsea have hit the woodwork more than us. So Chelsea have hit the woodwork 17, Palace 14. Sums it up, because we've had the shots, we've had the chances, just haven't put it away, have we? A lot of the time. And we're ranked first, top of the league, for tackles with 502. And just go show our defence this year, clean sheet-wise, you know, it is strong, isn't it? And that, for me, haven't taken our chances, but been strong at the back. That's me. That's Palace. Your predictions, Chris, after all that?
2-0 to Crystal Palace.
Nice.
What do you think?
1-0, Benteke, back of the net. Yeah.
I'm going to go 2-0, Jeff Schlupp again.
Oh,
again.
Does he celebrate against his old team?
No, he'll do the jog back thing anyway with his head down. And who else is going to score? Aaron Wan-Bissaka is going to get his first goal.
How does Aaron, do you think, take that goal? How does he celebrate it for you? Because he's quite an unassuming, quite, you know, modest man. Does he just lose it? Rip the shirt off, jump into the crowd?
I think he'd sell... No. I can imagine him celebrating it like someone who's a fan of the away team sitting in the home end.
Respectfully,
fist bump.
Sits on his hands on the halfway line.
Yeah, that's how he's going
to. Have you seen him score in training?
No, clearly. I haven't watched training much recently. But no, we have never put a. We've never caught him on camera scoring. I don't think.
Yeah, he must have banged a few. And
he scored. We saw him for the 23s when he was younger.
I would love that. If your prediction comes true, that would be the best one I think we could possibly get.
He was at an event this week, the E-Premier League playoffs.
Yeah.
He came down, he got absolutely destroyed by this guy that wasn't even playing in the competition. He was just a friend of a guy. And
what
he absolutely
score?
Destroyed him. Like four or five or six, but it was he was all over him.
Bless him. But fair play for coming down. So he didn't take on the top, was it top 30 that qualified?
Yes. No, he didn't take any of those. No, he did start to. Yeah, there was a Palace fan that got through the first round that he played against.
And?
Well, at half time he was losing 3 or 4 nil. Yeah. And the guy had to go and play his quarter final match.
Yeah, you don't do that.
It was weird.
Was
it? It was really weird. Really quiet. They don't celebrate. It's just tap, tap, tap of joysticks.
Is it, what, as a celebration?
Joypads,
yeah. That's the celebration, is it?
Yeah,
tap, tap,
you
don't
hear anything at all apart from when and you start thinking, oh, why don't they celebrate? When they do celebrate, you're like, oh, he's an idiot.
Yeah, well, that's probably answered your question, why they don't celebrate. You've got Chris Grierson judging you on the bat.
Yes, indeed. There'll be a video about that next week. Right, you done? Because I'll go off to Palace Ladies.
I've got to jump in that ice bath, that lovely...
Okay, I'm just going to go and use Pards' loo. See ya. Yeah. Statman there. It was very chatty this week. And moving on to something a bit different, something that will appeal to some of you football nerds out there. Although I need to be careful about saying football nerds, because the man doing the interview today is actually my boss. James Woodroof, who's our head of content and production, he called up a guy called James Armstrong, who's a Palace fan, and he's 32nd in the world out of 6.2 million people on Fantasy Premier League, which is very impressive. Obviously, last season we had Jamal Rice, who did so well, an incredible player. But yeah, this time it's James Armstrong we're talking to, and he's going to give his tips on Fantasy Premier League for those of you that play it.
James, firstly, congratulations on being top of the Crystal Palace Fan League in game week 26 of the Fantasy Premier League. Tell us a bit about yourself and how come you're a Palace fan.
Well, I'm a Palace fan since a very young age. I think the main reason I'm a Palace fan, I went to see a game when I was about, oh God, I must have been sort of early teens, 12, 14, 15, and it was a West Ham game. And I think it was a drawback on the day. But yeah, I think mainly actually, believe it or not, it was like the Eagle thing, the whole branding of the club. I really kind of bought into that. I love the whole kind of pre-match build up, and the fan base of the Palace fans is, I think, it's world renowned. You know, the noise and just the kind of support that the club gets is fantastic. That's mainly why I'm a Palace fan, I suppose, and just the style of football Palace has consistently produced over the years. It's very attacking, and it's to an extent, it's actually fairly consistent in terms of the style that the club seems to produce. And from time to time, we kind of find these little stars, you know, like Van Aanholt and Zaha, Balassi last season, or maybe the season prior to that. So yeah, it's those kind of players that really attract me to the club.
Quality. And let's cut straight to the chase. You are 32nd in the world on Fantasy Premier League out of 6.2 million players. Tell us the story about your season so far.
Okay, so this isn't my first season. It's probably my fifth or sixth season in FPL. But my first account, I just lost my passwords, got locked out of my Yahoo account, and in the end, I started up a brand new account last year. So I've only got a history of kind of. So last season, I think I was 300,000, but before then, I'd finished 26,000 and 15,000. So I've always been in the sort of the top 50,000 across most seasons. But this year, I think I've spent far less time actually looking at stats, because in previous seasons, I was just neck deep in stats and statistics and spreadsheets and producing my own little algorithms to try and work out clean sheets. And in the end, I just became so obsessed, it was actually starting to kind of affect my everyday life. I would have, like, you know. I think this season I've just taken a far more relaxed approach and been more fluid and just sort of not jumping on the bandwagons too quickly, but at the same time acknowledging, like, big changes, like at Man U with Pogba and Rashford, etc. I just actually believe it or not, spending less time doing it.
That is absolutely fascinating. You're speaking to a man who spends hours upon hours agonising over their team. And I had to leave my league's WhatsApp this year because it was getting it all a bit too much for me. I'm sure you can feel the pain when you're in when you think you're in a bit of a rut and you can't get out of it.
Absolutely.
What would you say were the most successful? Obviously, you say you spent less time sort of worrying about it and analysing the game. What would you say have been, you know, your best decisions so far?
Okay, so my best decision was to go back and look at the bigger picture and kind of just almost visualise at the end of the season who are going to be the top scoring people, in each position. So for me, it was quite easy. So as a midfield, it was going to be Salah, Hazard, Eriksen, Pogba, and then there's going to be kind of a smaller value enablers like maybe Jota or someone like that, or maybe Kante, I was even thinking, or maybe Willian. Up front, it's always going to be Aguero, up front it was a bit hard because with Aubameyang and Lacazette, there was a lot of kind of controversy for me. I wasn't sure which style of footballer would actually do better in Premier League. And defensively, again, same thing, Alonso. So basically, I just thought, you know, if I'm going to put up a template team as quickly as possible, but the real success and the real turnaround points for me in my rank have been getting Hazard in the week before the Cardiff game, because I think he got brace and an assist. And I got him at a fairly good price. And then the next key move for me was Pogba, and I got Pogba in on the news that Mourinho was leaving Man U. And I just trusted my gut that, you know, he was going to be off the leash. And I knew that Solskjaer was a big fan of Pogba and always kind of talked about building a club around him. And my third key move was getting Aguero in on my most recent wild card instead of getting Aubameyang. And I triple captained him at the double game week, where a lot of people were kind of going for, there were valid choices, but people were going for Sane and Sterling. But with the amount of rotation that, you know, that Pep seems to sort of demonstrate in most of his games, I thought the simplest and easiest, most logical one would be Kun, Aguero. Those three key moves for me, and having a really cheap defence. Wan-Bissaka is cheap, but he's fantastic, obviously. But and also Bennett and Doherty, nice consistent player.
Yeah.
So yeah, those three moves, sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've cracked it, obviously. I mean, how you mentioned Aaron Wan-Bissaka, is he the only Palace player you've had this season? And how much does your sort of love for the Palace dictate? Does it sometimes present a few headaches? You think, oh God, I wouldn't mind if the opposition win this one because of what for whatever reason because of your team selection.
Yeah, last season and previous seasons, I was actually quite stubborn and I would retain Palace players regardless of their performance. So punching was one of my, you know, really kind of really difficult ones because love the player, Zaha as well. But I think sometimes you just have to make the decision between your heart and sort of actually, you know, your rank. And it depends on, obviously, you know, fixtures and form. So of course. But yeah, I mean, Wan-Bissaka is the only one I've got at the moment, just because his underlying stats are really good, and like I say, he's an enabler. So,
and yeah, are you lining up a potential gamble on Michy Batshuayi, perhaps?
You know, I was looking at him listed the other day, so I think he's priced at $6.5 million.
Yeah,
And he is looking good. I mean, he's got an assist in his first game out. So that caught my eye straight away. But again, yeah, I think it's flair, and I think he'll team up very nicely with someone like, Zaha. So I'm just going to give it another couple of games, see how many minutes he gets, see how fit he is.
Yeah.
But just give him the eye some match of the day, and then, yeah, I would like to get him in because I would like to finish the season with a couple of Palace players, definitely.
So how far can you go? Do you reckon you can win it?
Well, I'm on a lot of forums and stuff, and in short, I mean, I've always been encouraging towards other people in terms of, you know, some people ask, I'm ranked 25,000, you know, could I still win? I've still got all my chips, etc. And I've always been kind of very positive towards those posts and saying, of course you can, because if you get your captain right for the next 11 weeks running or whatever's left in the season, you know, in theory you could do, but you do have to go outside the template. My team's very templated at the moment, so I know that towards the run-up of the end, I'm going to have to start making a few maverick moves, I think, just to claw back. I think I'm about 40, maybe 50 points off the top.
It's not much, though, is it? It's probably a couple of good captain picks, and you'll be away.
I think so. The bench. There's a couple of blank game weeks coming up, which a lot of players will probably bypass them. So me having my bench boost and my free hit, I should be able to claw back 20 points just from using those two chips. So in theory, you know, I would certainly want to finish in the top 50 now, definitely.
When do you reckon you're going to play your chips?
Well, this week's tempting because I've got Aguero, I've got three players that are essentially not playing. But I think game week 31 and 32 is when I'm looking at it because definitely going to be some either doubles or blanks around that period.
Yeah.
But we've got to see how the FA Cup and things like that pan out. So.
Well, James, you're probably the envy of all of our listeners and readers today, being so good. I mean, obviously, we want a Palace fan to go and win the FPL, so everyone's going to be behind you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and good luck.
Thank you very much, James. Pleasure.
Top man.
James Armstrong there, and now we go back into the press conference room, the same room where I interviewed Martin Kelly, but this time it's full of journalists, tea, coffee, biscuits, cameras, social media people tapping away, and the Crystal Palace manager, Roy Hodgson. So here's Roy, and speak to you next week.
A bit of injury news, please.
We won't have Aaron Wan-Bissaka. He's still recovering from the hamstring problem that he's been suffering from. And we won't have Martin Kelly, who picked up a slight muscle strain in the game against Doncaster. We don't think it's a long-term injury, but it's unfortunately so close to the game against Doncaster, he's not recovered from that. So they're the two injury problems we have.
You've spoken about it in recent days, but tomorrow's a special day for you. You become officially the oldest manager in Premier League history. Did you ever think you would survive or reach such a landmark?
I don't know. I've got to say, I've never given it very much thought. I've been obliged to give it some thought recently because people have kept asking me about it. But my views regarding age haven't really changed in that respect. I think you're as old as you feel most of the time, and I suppose, as you say, it's a milestone. It's a little historical mark, which I guess I can be very pleased about because it's good to have had such a long career and to still be enjoying that career. But otherwise, I don't pay any great attention to it.
But is it not probably a bigger achievement than you think? Because you think over the last 40 years, how many managers have come and go, some really talented ones, the ones we thought were going to do well. Some of them came along maybe 30 years ago, their career was done 10 years later. You've outlasted them all. It's tough to keep a job in an era when managers are so dispensable.
Yes, I mean, obviously you need to be proud of that. I take your point, and if it's a compliment involved there, I thank you for it. I think it is important to if you believe in your profession and you love the game as passionately as most of us who are managers do, having the ability to survive in it and to you know, put a few things on your CV that you can be proud of is obviously something that you can be happy that you've achieved. But I think achievements often, they're more interesting to you when you look back on them, and when you're actually in the middle of a very important job, you know, fighting every week for Premier League points and fighting very hard to make certain the team you work for does well and survives in the Premier League, I don't often think there's much time to look back and reflect upon where you are or the journey you've been on. It's really the journey that you're on at this particular moment in time that occupies all my waking thoughts, and luckily my age doesn't ever come into my mind, because I think I made a conscious decision to stop at 60. For years I stopped at 50, but I mean, but certainly, or 40 even, but I think I probably made a conscious decision at some stage, well, 60, that's enough, and all the time I'm feeling okay, I'll stay at 60, and it doesn't matter what it says on my birth certificate.
What though is the key to staying relevant when the pace of change in the game, especially over the last 20 years, is just so rapid? It changes season by season, doesn't it?
Yeah, the game changes and changes, as we've said so many times, for the better, because it becomes more and more professional. The athletes become better athletes. They're quicker, they're stronger, they prepare for games well. But I think the thing that keeps you, or allows you to keep pace, is the fact that you are out there with them every day, and you are able to see the progress that they're making as players, and you know, quite happily tap into it. So I don't know that it's a major problem getting older in that respect, because the manager-player relationship, anyway, it's a very close relationship and it's a very important relationship, but it's one that focuses very, very much on the professional side of your life together. It doesn't have quite the same effect on your personal or social life. So therefore, although the gap between the social mores of the young player today and the young player of 40-odd years ago obviously changed, it doesn't matter a great deal, because you know, you're not obliged necessarily to keep up with the music they listen to or the films they watch, because that's not part of your daily conversation. However, of course, when you start off and you're 28 years of age and you've got a couple of players in your team who are 30, 31, it's a little bit different, because then probably you are listening to the same music and you are watching the same films.
Talking about today then, or tomorrow rather, a win could take you to within 2 points of Leicester in 10th. You're a man who likes to look upwards. Do you still believe your squad's got it within it to finish in the top 10?
Yes, I think we have, although we've handicapped ourselves by the points we've dropped on the way up till now. But yes, I still believe that the quality of the team and the way they work together and their own determination to move up the table is something which gives me great satisfaction, great heart. But every point in this league, let alone every victory, is something which has to be fought for, and you maybe even need a bit of luck on your side to get that point or those 3 points. And all you can hope for is that the team's going to go there well prepared and capable and believing that they're going to do it. And I think that's what will be the case for us tomorrow against Leicester. Then we'll have to see what the game throws up.
Claude Puel has come in for some criticism this season, despite keeping Leicester in the top 10, at some points even higher than that throughout the season. Do you think there's enough appreciation from fans and media just how hard it is to keep a team at that level throughout the course of the season?
I think there should be, because you know, people are not stupid and they follow football, not just their own team, they follow what's going on in the world of football. So I think everyone should be aware, of how difficult it is for us to compete against any one of our rivals in the league, and in particular to compete with the ones who are in that top six, if you like, where the financial power of those teams is so much greater.
Jamie Vardy didn't start the last game at Wembley against Tottenham. Are you hoping that he doesn't start again tomorrow?
I like Jamie Vardy and I think he's a very good player, but I think I'll stay out of any selection issues, and that's purely a matter for Claude and his coaching staff. But if Jamie plays, we know what he can do. We know the danger he presents, and certainly I hope that our defensive setup will be aware of it.
You've got Wilf Zaha back from the additional one-match ban against Doncaster last week, but did the players you played at Doncaster maybe give you a decision to make? I mean, you know, Meyer, Schlupp, Batshuayi, sure. Townsend all played well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Kouyaté, when he came on, was excellent. So it's good to see that the players are in form, and sometimes those matches where you're able to make a few changes, they strengthen your belief that the squad is deeper than just the 11 who happen to have the shirts at this moment in time, and that was definitely the case in Doncaster. But it's good to have the players that I rested for that game back, and it's good to go into these coming games with just the two injuries, both of which I hope will not be particularly long term.
Martin Kelly signed a new contract this morning, keeps him at the club until 2021. How pleased were you to get that one done?
Very pleased. We have a great deal of respect and admiration for Martin Kelly. He hasn't always been the number one pick in his position, and he's had to fight to get games against other players. But the good thing with Martin is that you know that even if he's not the first pick at any moment in time, the moment you do need him as your first pick, he's going to come in and do the job exceptionally well. And furthermore, in training and his attitude and his comportment, if you like, around the place, it's absolutely top class. And people like him, that level of professional is not always easy to find. So when you found one and he's at your club, it's very, very important to try and persuade him to stay. And luckily for me, and I think luckily for Crystal Palace Football Club, that's what's happened.
And what did you make of the punishment handed down to Chelsea? They're not allowed to operate in two transfer windows. You've done business with them recently. It may even affect your prospects of signing Batshuayi if that's what you want to do in the summer. What did you make of it? Did it seem harsh?
I can't really comment on that, Aidan. I mean, the fact is, I only just found out about it, you know, just before coming to the press conference. And it is a matter between FIFA, Chelsea, and I believe from what Joe told me, the FA are even involved, and I believe there's an appeal process. So as far as I'm concerned, I'll have to leave that matter to the people concerned, and I think it's even could be prejudicial to start making too many comments about it.
Okay, thanks, Aidan. Ian.
Hi, Roy. I don't want to harbour on too much about your record tomorrow becoming the oldest manager in the Premier League, but how hard is it these days dealing with players with all the new things that you wouldn't have had when you played or started managing, like social media and having to deal with all the various things that players, flash cars that they have?
Oh, those two things are very different. I mean, how people choose to spend their money, you know, what cars they wear, what watches, what cars they buy, what watches they wear, what clothes they buy, houses they live in, that's perfectly entitled to do that. Well, I've never had any issue with that, and I've never looked and made any judgments in that respect at all, and wouldn't dream of doing so. When it comes to social media, this is an aspect of people's lives these days, which obviously for these young players it's an important part of their lives, but they're very well educated now as to what they can and can't do and should and shouldn't do, especially in relation to their professional life. And it only becomes of interest to me when it actually sort of boils over or moves over into the professional field, where maybe things that are said in social media or things they've done on social media affect us as a football club or affect them professionally. And luckily that hasn't happened too much in recent times here at Crystal Palace, and we have a very good group of people who monitor that and work at that for me. So as a manager, it doesn't play a major part in my life.
By the way, what has the magic recipe been for you to stay in football this long?
I don't know, really. I think you've got to like it. I think you've got to enjoy the day-to-day work. I think you've got to enjoy working with footballers, which I've always done. I think you've got to maintain a certain amount of youthfulness in your general demeanour, which I hope I've been able to do. I think you need to look after yourself, health-wise, which, again, luckily, I've been pretty much able to do. And then you've got to be very lucky to be given jobs where you can go in, hopefully make an impact, and then be appreciated by the people you're working for.
I think I'm right in saying your first away win here as manager was at Leicester 3-0 last year. Is that right?
I wouldn't have thought it was it. Okay.
Yeah. So, happy memories then.
Yes, indeed.
Remember the game, but not that it was the first
game. Well, that was the first game. I remember the game very well, of course. Yeah. If I remember all the three games against Leicester quite well, but I didn't know that was the first win. And again, it's historical. Unfortunately, if that gave me some advantage going into tomorrow's game, meaning that a win tomorrow is almost a foregone conclusion because we won my first game there 3-0 almost a couple of years ago, then I would be very interested in the statistic. But as it has absolutely no bearing on the game whatsoever, it's just one of those anecdotal moments in history, which it's nice that you remind me of because it can bring a smile to my face rather than a frown, but it doesn't affect my life enormously.
Okay, having done the smile, I might bring the frown now. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it's sitting here, but are you in a relegation battle? I mean, because of the points.
Sure, of course we are. I mean, the fact that I think teams probably even above us in the table with 3 or 4 more points. They know, because they know the difficulty of this league and how hard every point is to gain. I bet you can interview managers, you know, sitting 3 or 4 points better off than we are and ask them a question, you know, is relegation something which enters your head from time to time? I'm sure it will do, because you know that any moment in time you can go on a run of 3 or 4 games where you don't get any points. And in that time, other teams will overtake you. It's got to be a day-by-day thing. And certainly the thought and the knowledge that this can happen to you, that you know, you can be on a good run of games, but then suddenly you hit a run of games where it doesn't go well for you. The knowledge of that keeps us all very much on our toes, and if we're wise, it stops us ever being complacent or thinking, oh, you know, the job's half done now. It never is. But also, we don't actually go out every day discussing relegation or in fear that the next bad result will push us into relegation problems. We still believe that we're capable of getting, you know, even into the top half of the table, and that's what we aim for. But we're not stupid enough to know it couldn't happen.
Thanks, Roy.
Pleasure.
Roy, I'd also like to ask quickly about this record. Does it make you realise what a special achievement it is when you realise it's Sir Bobby Robson you're surpassing?
Yes, it is. I mean, don't forget that I'm fortunate in the sense that I started a bit younger than some of these people. You know, even people like Sir Bobby and Sir Alex, who started relatively young, they were a little bit older than me when they started their careers. But it's an achievement which I think I can be happy about. If you call getting old and still being in a job an achievement, then it's an achievement. But it's certainly a situation that I'm happy about, because I still very much enjoy this work. I enjoy working at Crystal Palace Football Club with the players we have here. I enjoy my day-to-day life. I'm always looking forward to the next game, you know, to what the future will bring. So it's nice to still be in a job of this nature and at this high level when I've reached the age I've reached. But as I've said earlier on, and you probably heard me say, I think age is definitely a number. You know, there are people who are much older than me, who's, you know, you show no signs of, I mean, I don't know quite how old Sir David Attenborough is now, but I mean, when you watch him working and you see his documentaries on TV, you'd have to be a very strange person to start saying, I don't think it's very good because he's old. I think most of us think it's very, very good, and it's whatever age he happens to be. He seems to have been doing it. He was good when I first saw him doing them, and he's still good today. And that gives me the encouragement that in football, why should it be any different to TV broadcasting or documentary making?
How much did you admire Robson when he was in his final months at Newcastle? At that point when you were watching, did you ever think it was realistic that another Premier League manager would surpass him?
That's a good question. I don't know that the thoughts enter my head. If I was to be honest, I would probably have to say that at that time when, you know, Bob had come back from abroad and had gone there to Newcastle and was doing well at the time, And everyone, of course, was constantly pointing out that, you know, he was in his 70s. Maybe I probably wouldn't have thought that this is a milestone that I will ever get close to. So having done so, I've got to be pleased about that, I guess. And I'm certainly pleased to be always bracketed in the same group, if you like, or mentioned in the same breath as people like Bobby Robson, who I think was an excellent manager, an excellent football coach, an excellent person, and who also I was lucky enough to be able to call a friend.